back, Meshuldur, and welcome to Shift F1, a podcast about speedy race cars. That, by the way, Azerbaijani for Is This Seat Taken? In honor of yet another different winner in Baku. I am Drew Scanlon. Joining me is Danny O'Dwyer. How are you, Danny?
I'm great, man. I'm good. The Baku, it's like a voodoo, man. You never know when it's going to strike, but it's going to strike. Even if you're halfway through the race, don't sleep. Baku is coming for you.
Also coming for us, Rob Zachney. How are you, Rob?
Yeah, Baku truly is like the sinister Monaco. You know, like Monaco, boring,
mega Monaco.
Exactly what it looks like. Baku? What's it up to?
Something in the water in the Caspian Sea, my friend.
If you are new to this podcast, a very warm welcome. And if you're new to Formula One itself, good time to start. We recommend listening to our preseason primer episode, which assumes no prior F1 knowledge, and we'll get you up to speed on who everybody is and how the sport works and everything. So if you'd like to go listen to that and get a nice foundation, it's episode 137. Also, the show is supported entirely by our audience over at patreon.com/shiftf1, where every month we release bonus podcasts and videos exclusively for our patrons, covering racing documentaries and films, F1 video games, experiments with other racing series, and a lot of weird things. If you sign up now, there's like so much weird stuff in the back catalog.
Oh my gosh.
And it's probably about to get much weirder. So if you'd like to support the show and get access to all that fun stuff, head over to patreon.com/shiftf1. Click the link in the show notes. Well, what's been going on this month, Danny?
Yeah, quick check-in on all that. So I guess with the whole 23 or how many races we're doing this year, it means we have a lot of track walks that have been going up for the past couple of months, and there's way more to come. In fact, we'll have, I guess, because the triple header is coming up next, so we're going to have, although two of those are Spielberg, so maybe there's some override there. But yes, we have three tiers on Patreon, in case you didn't know. The Paddock Pass people who are in the $5 range, they get all access to the bonus podcast we've done over the past, how many years? Three, 4 years? It's like, at this stage, there's, you know, who knows, 50 hours probably worth of podcasts on old, on racing movies and stuff like that. We're about to record our new one after doing Drive to Survive, which is quite a lot of homework for people to consume before the podcast. We've decided to go a bit shorter for this month. So we're going to watch the animated short Le Mans 1955, which is about 15 minutes long and beautifully shot, or beautifully animated rather. So we'll be talking about that on the podcast this week, on the patron exclusive podcast. Sorry, this month. And loads of track walks coming to Media Pass this month, as well as, of course, me opening packs of cards, because like any good YouTuber, I know how Skinner boxes work. And a massive shout out to all of our awesome title sponsors, Jason Kelly, Will Rumpf, Umberto Roca, Circuit Demon, Reagan, Sam G, Connor McManus, Jason Chadwick, Abdullah Althani, Bailey Foot, Jack Ben, Greg Salt, Fudo Highs, BPM, who've gone with Paps Plumibin this month, the week. It's pretty good. Drew Stewart, Tracy Syntax, and I know Jack. I know Jack is like it's like a nickname for other John or Jason and stuff like that, right?
This might
too many
be short for John.
Yeah, let's go with John. John Mahoff, let's say. thank you for joining this month.
It's
a family podcast.
Yes, let's jump right in to Baku, fellas, because there's a lot to get to here. Baku started biting hard in qualifying.
Oh.
Turn 15 took out Stroll and Giovinazzi in Q1. Both causing red flags. The red flag for Stroll actually enabled Russell's mechanics to finish repairing his car after a problem that he had in practice.
So funny. Yeah.
Which was pretty cool.
The monkey paw working there.
Right. The red flag for Giovinazzi, though, led to a 3-place grid penalty for Norris because he didn't enter the pits.
Yeah.
When the red flag came, it was one of those, like, you know, when you're rolling up to a traffic light and the light turns yellow right at the wrong time, you're like, should I gun it? Should I slam on the brakes? It was one of those situations, and he chose to not enter the pits. He even asked his team, like,
but here's the thing, right? When that happens, in your heart of hearts, you know whether or not you're meant to slow down or
it's
not.
True.
And Norris, I think, got caught out. I think he was like, you know what? I'm going to finish this lap because just in case I want to get a time in. But I'll ask my pit lane if it's the right time, and then, you know,
The other thing is, I think it was worse on replay, where people were like, oh, it was a judgment call, it was real close there. On replay, it's like, that he could have dumped all the speed and, like, safely entered the pits. Like, everyone's like, oh, it's a tough pit entry. And it's like, it's not that tough. Like, I could have done that. And so it's just, wow. It was kind of a weird lapse. I wonder if, like, was he distracted? He didn't fully know exactly where he was on the straight, and he thought he was closer. I don't know. But, like, if you look at it on replay, it's like, it's a clear mistake. And there's no, it's kind of baffling as to why he would be asking his pit lane, unless he's trying to get a lap.
Yeah, so normally it is apparently a 5-place grid penalty for this, but I guess the stewards were a little lenient because they only gave him a 3-place penalty, yeah. Sort of a half measure.
A talking to. Weird. Yeah.
Yeah. He also got some penalty points on his license, bringing him, I think he has the most.
He does. He's 8? Yeah. Eight and 15 is a... Isn't
12,
it
I think.
Oh, it's 12. Okay.
Yeah. You accrue 12 points in a 12-month calendar year, and you have to sit out a race, so...
I wonder when his last one was. Because, yeah, of course, it's not by season. It's by calendar. It's by
rolling.
The year.
So, yeah, I don't know when those are going to drop off in the back there. But, so that was all in Q1 at turn 15. Turn 4 took out 2 more cars. Ricardo in Q2 and Tsunoda in Q3. Sainz also had to bail off. On an escape road to avoid Tsunoda on that last one. And that crash also meant that nobody got to do a second run in Q3. So everybody went out once, and that was kind of your lap. Meaning Charles Leclerc gets his second pole position in a row.
Crazy. Absolutely crazy.
Lewis Hamilton qualified right next to him in second place. Then we've got Max Verstappen in third, and Pierre Gasly in fourth. Carlos Sainz is in fifth, Sergio Perez in sixth, Yuki Tsunoda doing well to get it in seventh, Fernando Alonso in eighth, Lando Norris in ninth, again after his 3-place grid penalty, and then Valtteri Bottas in 10th. Behind them, sorry, Rob, go ahead.
Just, we should mention Valtteri's like qualifying is a little bit deceptive there because because of the truncated Q3, he never really got set up to do a proper run out there. Like he
slingshotted Lewis, right?
Yeah. He was giving Lewis the toe, and ironically accidentally ended up towing Leclerc as well to an extent. He was the head of a train that brought Ferrari to the front. But yeah, you know, Valtteri had a bad qualifying in part because he was put in the sacrifice position for that one. But it also does seem, we discussed this in the race, seems like something was up with that car performance.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Behind them in 11th place, we've got Sebastian Vettel, followed by Esteban Ocon, Daniel Ricciardo, Kimi Raikkonen, George Russell starting in 15th place. Then we've got Latifi, Schumacher, Mazepin, and then the two who crashed, Stroll and Giovinazzi, did not set a time. So there you go. A little bit of a scrambled field heading into what is certain to be a scrambling race. If history is to be believed.
It was the tied for most red flags in qualifying with 4. So that's
a lot in 1 hour.
That's a lot of red flags. Yeah, even for Baku.
Right. do you want to take us through the start then, Danny?
Yeah, there's literally nothing to say about the start.
there's some stuff.
They all get. I'm waiting for somebody to break wrong and fall down that escape road, or on turn 2 to go down that escape road, or for there to be some fighting on the first DRS straight. I guess it was a little bit of that. But in terms of the leaders, Leclerc had a great start, pulled away. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of drivers here know that if you can survive Baku, there's a good chance of you getting points. And if you can survive Baku at the front, there's a good chance that you'll get more points than you would at a regular track. So they're pretty... careful around here. There's also like kind of, as we said last week, there's a few places on this track to overtake if you've got the pace, so you don't need to be doing anything crazy at the start. So we didn't see much crazy stuff at the start. There was basically not much overtaking until the DRS zone, and I'm trying to think, was that when
Perez got by Gasly?
Yes, that's what it was. That was at turn 3, I think, right at the end of the DRS straight. And then someone else did really well at the back. I know Vettel got the jump on Bottas, and then I think there was someone else who did really well. Like Kimi got 5 places right away, or Lando. Someone like that who was like 16th ended up
wasn't Lando. McLaren's plummeted at the opening. They lost.
You're right. Sorry, he did the opposite. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Vettel got two. Yeah. And who is this? Giovinazzi.
Wow.
Got five.
Start with nothing.
Mr. It's all first lap, man.
Exactly.
He had to overtake the host. They had to let him pass, you know, like, you know.
Yeah.
I know it's not blue flags, but go ahead. It's fine. We're used to it.
Well, that Leclerc's lead doesn't last very long because Hamilton gets by him on the straight without DRS.
Yeah.
And a few laps later, Verstappen gets by Leclerc into second when DRS is turned on. And at the same time, picture in picture shows Tsunoda getting by Alonso with DRS into seventh place, which is cool. And then, yeah, shortly thereafter, Perez by Leclerc also into third place. So now the running order is Hamilton, Verstappen, Perez, Leclerc.
Also, I just want to mention a few people do really early pit stops in here, which is just going to be relevant because a question that emerges from this race is, like, was something up with the Pirellis on the long stints? And we see, Giovinazzi comes in super early for Hards, and I think the Williams boys do as well.
Yeah.
And so there's a few guys out there who are trying really aggressive track position strategies on this, which ends up being a good call.
Yeah, we'll also see Aston Martin playing the long game, kind of going the opposite direction, leaving their guys out for much longer. Although they've got different tires on. Vettel has softs and Stroll has hards, but we'll get to that. Lap 11, Sainz goes into the runoff area after missing a turn.
Yeah,
Go ahead.
Worth mentioning that was a turn 8, right? So they changed the entry to turn 8, which I didn't catch in the track walk last week. So there's an initial sort of like, what would you even call it? It's kind of, it makes it almost like a faux chicane. As you're basically at the castle part, before you creep up to the castle, there was that like little tricky
They shaved
part.
Off the left apex.
Exactly. Yeah. So this is the thing where if you hit it, it almost was like the Singapore sling, where if you hit this thing and lost any contact with the ground,
kick you into the other one.
Exactly, you were going into that wall. You'd never make the turn, and that's what happened to Leclerc a couple of years back. Like, so that was the one to stop people from basically like creating a massive parking lot there if you crash.
Right.
So they shaved off that entry a little bit, which we actually it didn't come up very often because there wasn't much action there at all. But in that one instance, Sainz missed the entry there.
So around that time is when pit stops start happening at the front. Hamilton pits from first, goes from soft to hard tires, but it's a slow stop because they had to hold him for Gasly entering the pits at the same time, which is it's a real bummer because you look down the rest of the pit lane and there's nobody. Like, really, the one time another car is coming in here and it's the Red Bull when we want to release.
Like, I don't think it's that. I don't think they can core. I don't think the two pit boxes can coordinate that way. I don't think Helmet is sitting there like on two phones, like, but it is just like they could not have strategized that any better to make sure that whatever work Hamilton did on the track got completely erased there.
Yeah, because Verstappen follows shortly thereafter and does a much faster stop, 1.9 seconds, and
They're
comes
so
out
good.
Way ahead
They're
of
so
Hamilton.
Good.
So expertly jumping him.
Well,
in the pits.
And in all of this, with clear track out of him, Perez is just gone. That's the thing. Like, Verstappen was looking like he was well-positioned to lead this race, but then Perez had so much, like, performance in his back pocket that suddenly it was looking like he was going to easily create a gap to Max that couldn't be that probably couldn't be made up, except... Again, I can't help but be conspiracy-minded about these things. When Perez goes in, Red Bull flubs the pit stop. And supposedly, it's one of the guns has a fault, and it takes them extra time to execute the wheel change. But it's a 4.3-second stop. And again, like, boy, if you just want to avoid team politics discussions, what can be done? Just we had a bad pit stop, and it just reshuffled our primary driver to the front. My antennae were twitching when I saw that. You go from a 1.9 second stop to a 4.3.
Yeah, he does get out still ahead of Hamilton, though. So behind Verstappen, but ahead of Hamilton, which is crucial because for Verstappen, certainly, because Perez will be quite an obstacle for Hamilton to get past if he wants to chase down Verstappen.
He's got the one of the widest cars on the grid.
for sure.
And,
like
and
we mentioned,
now it's fast. Before it wasn't, so even harder.
Yeah.
Oh, and we should also mention, you mentioned earlier, Vettel stays out for a really long stint. And this is, like, people were commenting what a good run it was, and I was thinking, like, this is Vettel's happy space, man. Like, he is out in front, clear air. All he has to do is, like, turn consistent, fast, and, like, low wear laps. And turns out he still is one of the best in the business at, like, doing that assignment.
Yeah, he leads the race for, like, three laps, which is great to see. And yeah, he stays out for, I think, five laps longer than anyone else on the soft tires. And like we mentioned before, Aston Martin opts to leave Stroll out for a long time as well. I mean, he started from the back, so doing the strategy could potentially move him up, especially if there is a safety car. Because if you go long on your tires and there's a safety car, suddenly everyone on track is lapping much slower, and so you lose less time in the pits. Well, we got a safety car, but unfortunately, it was for Stroll.
And it closed the pits.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah. You're right.
We cut back to the straight, and it is Stroll's car in tatters next to a wall. On replay, it looks like his rear left tire fails on the straight, which is really scary because it's the fastest part of the track. And it kind of turns him and he noses right into the wall. It's rough stuff. Well, like, but yes, a safety car comes out.
He doesn't have that much clearance to Gasly behind him. Like, Gasly has to react very quickly to avoid broadsiding him. Because, yeah, it's just one of those nightmare wrecks in F1. These cars are not meant to have, like, terminal dives into the wall on a straight. And so you see, like, the geometry of these accidents goes all wrong when something like that happens. And you could hear, like, Stroll sounded shaken. You know, he's on the radio. And he's like, get me out of here. Because he
red knows flags, red flags. He's like, get me out of here.
Yeah.
You know, he crashed. You could see in the crash, he didn't take his hands off the wheel because he is trying to make sure he does not go out into the racing line. I mean, it's one of the fastest parts of the F1 calendar, that straightaway. It's like 300 kilometers an hour at the top end. And, you know, it's not that much wiggle room to get around a car if you're flying that fast. So, you know, that's where we see those horror crashes, right? Like what we had in Spa and F2 a couple of years back. It's that type of thing. There's nothing faster than one of those cars coming at you. So, thankfully he was all right. And thankfully he did. He crashed left. He didn't crash right. And we'll talk about it later, but there was a crash later on that also thankfully went right and not left.
Yeah. So we do not get a red flag. We do get a safety car though for about four laps, and then the restart looks like Verstappen, Perez, Hamilton in the top three slots. Then we've got Gasly, Leclerc, Vettel, Tsunoda, Norris, Bottas, and then Ricciardo in 10th on the restart. Do you want to take us through this restart, Danny?
Oh my goodness.
Some notes too, if you need.
Yeah. Let me, yeah. Do you mind going for it? I'm going to check it out now, but go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. So Gasly locks up into turn one, which causes Leclerc behind to brake earlier. And that loss of momentum enables Vettel to swing into the inside and take fifth place from Leclerc. He's just biding his time. At the next corner, though, Leclerc has a huge lockup and misses rear-ending Vettel by like an inch.
Oh,
it is so close.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And Vettel's not done. He tries to move on Gasly at turn four, and Gasly defends. But at the end of the lap, Vettel's new tires, seven laps newer than Gasly's, perhaps give him an advantage, and he breezes by Gasly without DRS. Like the Aston Martin, for some reason, looked very good in this race.
Yeah, there's only 15 laps left at this stage too as well. So we're looking at Verstappen, Perez, Hamilton. But then look who's behind them. Vettel, Gasly, Leclerc. You're like, oh, a podium for one of them. I mean, a podium for Checo is cool. You know, he did say it would take him five races to sort of dial this thing in. But you're also thinking, oh, wouldn't it be cool if one of those managed to get up there too? Especially, yeah, like Leclerc's done well to hold on to this. He knew that podium was going to be difficult this weekend, but at least they were in a good position at the start. So yeah, it's an exciting prospect for the end of this race.
Yeah, but it wouldn't be Baku without a real curveball.
Baku.
So on lap 46, we cut once again to a shot of the start-finish straight, and Verstappen's car has just struck the wall and is spinning down the road. And it's weird because there's no other cars around him, and sure enough, it's the same thing that happened to Stroll here, a tire failure at the fastest part of the track.
Yeah, I eyes and ears and minds immediately return to, depends what era of F1 that you've watched, but this has happened. There's races where it just the tires didn't work or something happened, and you're suddenly like, oh, is this a tire problem? Is everyone now on edge? You think Silverstone, I think it was 6 years ago now, when it happened to the Mercedes, the tires were blowing up left, right, and center.
Well, wasn't it also like last year or the year before where we had multiple like tire lifespan issues where like near the end? Like that's where Hamilton finishes on three wheels, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, God. I think so. McLaren's also lost their tires there too.
So, yeah. I mean, this is so two things. One, I am impressed that the producers caught that incident so quickly. Because remember, they were like Hamilton was trying yet again to run Checo down, and once again, it didn't look like it was super in the cards. But he was trying once again to get a good run on him heading into that straight. And then we catch most of the incident, and then when you watch the replay from Max's perspective, you can hear the bang as the wheel lets go. And then a second later, all the handling goes away and he's just sort of dumped around there. Now, after the race, you know, you mentioned like, well, what's going on with the tires? There was already some weirdness around Stroll. Like what caused that? Pirelli downplayed it. They didn't think there were issues. Other teams didn't seem concerned about, tires blowing up. But this one was alarming. And after the race, there's kind of interesting, intense dynamic here. People ask Verstappen, like, well, what do you think the incident was? Have you heard anything? And Verstappen says, for sure, there will be talks with Pirelli, but we know the result from that conversation already, and that's a bit hard to accept. It'll be related to debris. It's like that. I'm sure there will be talks. Pirelli isn't happy with what happened here, but it doesn't change anything to the race and the result I got here. So basically, Max is saying, like, Pirelli always says it was debris. Why are their tires blowing up suddenly without warning? Oh, there must have been something on the track that nobody saw. And in the Autosport piece written about it, they do run down, this is by Jonathan Noble, they do run down the list of like catastrophic Pirelli tire failures in the last few years. And it's a pretty long list of incidents where tires just blow the hell up. And so there is a bit of there's a bit of distrust, and it's frustrating because like Pirelli has this sort of appointed monopoly. It's not like you can go to another tire manufacturer and be like, I'm going to go to one that's not going to blow up. They're stuck with
it
these
used
things.
Used to be.
Right. And they got rid of that in part because tires were blowing up.
Right.
But, so there's this like distrust of Pirelli in all this. And then here's the really interesting thing. Did you catch that after the race, when they pulled Hamilton's wheels off his car, one of his tires had a 7-inch cut in it that wasn't along the racing line. And it didn't blow, but like it does look like there was shit on the track that they hadn't caught that was really mistreating those tires. But like jury's out on what it was and where it was coming from. Must have been the other incidents, but I don't know.
So there's another wrinkle here, and it's not exactly a smoking gun, but so last year, or not last year because we didn't have a Baku last year, but the last time we raced here, the tires were one step harder because we've got five full sets, right? And we pick three of them to take to each race. These are the same softness in that range as Monaco, and last time we had one step harder. There's that, and apparently, as some have pointed out, Pirelli increased the minimum pressure of the tires on Friday, suggesting that they thought there may be a risk of fatigue failure, meaning that, you know, high loads over a sustained period could cause something bad to happen. So was that just a correction for using soft tires? I don't know.
There's a lot of like causation, correlation stuff here, isn't
yeah.
there? You're not quite sure. And then the thing I alluded to earlier, I just wanted to bring it up again, is the, you know, change happens in F1 because of crashes. And both of these thankfully ended up, you know, both guys walked away. Neither actually went to the, I don't think either went to the medical center. In fact,
I think Verstappen got checked out.
Oh, he did? Okay. Because you think with the G-forces at least that they go under. But Max's crash, I was sort of taken aback by, he went right, but to the left of him is one of the scarier pit wall entries in F1. Because it's on a straightaway, they have to basically create a mini chicane to get everyone to slow down before they hit the pit limiter, and because they're going at 300 kph before they hit it. If you can imagine, remember the crash that Grosjean had at last year, at the Sakhir Grand Prix, it's basically that on the opposite side. It's a 45 degree wall that you would essentially hit. And I tweeted about it, and one of my followers, Andrew, sent me a link to Nico Rosberg's track walk for Baku, which he had posted a few days earlier, where he calls out specifically that wall and says, imagine something breaks on the car here, you're going at 350 kilometers an hour. He said every time he would drive down here, he would remember, he would just like consider how dangerous that wall was on the outside, which is like crazy. Because the problem is sometimes we have these like flashbacks, like there was a famous Martin Brundle quote like 15 years ago where he talked about how dangerous he thought it was that there were JCBs on the track lifting cars off, you know, this happening years and years before the tragic death of an F1 driver because of that exact same thing. So sometimes we have these little moments where it calls back, you know, safety concerns that perhaps we weren't considering at the time. So this one to me, like the conversation around Pirelli, like you said, will probably, you know, this won't be enough to make change. But if Verstappen had broken left instead of right, we might be having a different conversation today.
Yeah, a couple things on that. I did see Massey, the race director, Michael Massey, responding to Rosberg's comments.
Oh, wow.
Saying that he didn't agree, and basically pointing to the fact that, like, this is a, you know, FIA grade one homologated track. We have checked it out. It's fine.
Right.
And I think kind of along the same lines, falling back to the rule book, there's a moment where they replay on the broadcast McLaren asking race control to look at Tsunoda having not slowed for double waved yellow flags.
Yeah.
So when Verstappen crashed, immediately double waved yellows come out before a safety car is called, before a red flag is called. And that's where the drivers are supposed to slow down and be prepared to stop. But because they're Formula One drivers and it's a straight, if it's like fuzzy like that, a lot of times drivers won't, you know, if it's not a hard and fast rule, they won't really abide by it. And you certainly see Tsunoda do this, but the race director called back to McLaren and basically said, like, look, if you're complaining about that, I would have to give penalties to the entire field, basically, because they didn't slow down. So by not, it's weird that it took like 90 seconds for him to call a red flag. And I think it's because, well, in a case like this, you wave double yellows and everyone slows down as per the rule book. But that's not the way the real world is working out, as we can see by him saying, you know, I would have had to penalize the entire field. So there's something is not lining up here.
Yeah. The other interesting thing, and perhaps this is a byproduct of the fact that they are now starting to broadcast these team principals talking to the race direction, which is really cool. It gives us amazing insight into just how many plates are being spun here. But another team, I'm not quite sure, I think it might have been Mercedes, was it? Or was it Red Bull who called and asked for the red flag and said... and
it was Red Bull.
Ray was a rebel, and they, you know, he said like blah blah blah, you know, there's a lot going on, and then he said, our point being that can we just get everyone on fresh safe tires, like, yeah, immediately with concern, because obviously they're like super concerned for Max, but also like probably pissed because they haven't had a 1-2 in forever, and they were on to get a for Red Bull to get a 1-2. So yeah, that was an interesting call to hear as well, the sort of genuine concern actually in his voice. I found quite interesting.
Yeah, so we do get a red flag, which under which you can change tires. So we won't really know if those hard Pirellis, you know, doing 30 plus laps, if more would have exploded, because everyone comes in and change tires. I think all to soft.
A couple of wings too, because you're allowed to do that. Mm-hmm. Hamilton put a new nose on.
Yeah, and it's kind of amazing because we're going to restart. From a standing, we're going to do a standing start and basically do two laps.
So weird.
How did you guys feel about this? Because for me at this point, like after two scary accidents, I was like, we're seriously going to do two more laps? Like, fuck this. Like, I don't see a value in continuing with this race. Now, I was proven wrong because what happens is cool. But like at the moment, I was like, we've had two really scary high-speed accidents here. The drivers are clearly shaken. And to this point, this field has started to feel pretty set. And so I was like, I don't fully get why we're doing this, and I don't really love the decision. Now, in retrospect, I kind of do. But in the moment, I'm sitting there, and I was like, I think this might just be it. Like,
maybe I am 100% with you. I had the exact... I had, like, the two little dudes on my shoulders were barking at each other, because in my gut, I felt like, let's just call it here. Like, it's only two laps left. I was, you know, a little bit like... you know, maybe recent years have softened me a bit, but like these crashes, man, I don't like them. You know what I mean? Like, I think when I first started watching F1, it was like an exciting thing, and it is still an exciting moment. And there's a certain element of this sport, of course, that is, it's all part of it, and it does make it exciting and varies it up and is interesting. But like, there's something about that. This stuff feels different because I don't like people crashing on straightaways and not having control. It's just, and then everyone's gonna be boxed up. So I was with you. I was like, you know what, I think my stomach, it's, I got up for five in the morning for this. I think I'm good. But then the other part of me was like, yeah, but this is gonna be fucking mental. This is like two laps from a starting start. Like, this has never happened before, Danny. You gotta want this. And then the other person on my shoulder was like, yeah, but you want Perez to win probably, right? And it looks like he's gonna start from first. So yeah, very conflicting.
So yeah, so for the restart, Perez is in first, followed by Hamilton. Then we've got Vettel, Gasly, Leclerc in fifth, then Tsunoda, Norris, Sainz,
wow,
Ricciardo, Alonso. So yeah, it's a great top 10 for the restart. And as we're watching the lights go on, Hamilton, his brakes are just smoking.
It's one of the most incredible F1 images I've seen in ages, because the sun was going down, so you had this beautiful, yeah, like cross lighting slanting across the track, and it was catching these billows of smoke coming off his car. It was like just wreathed in steam, and it looked like cool as hell, but also I was like, that seems weird. I'm often, F1 brakes do that, and a lot of times it doesn't mean shit. And I'm not sure it did mean anything here, but it did imply, yeah, that he'd done something while coming to the pit box, to the grid box, that was about to blow up spectacularly.
Will I take the restart?
Sure.
Yeah. So first of all, for people who are new to F1, because I know a lot of people are probably like, wait, why is brakes on fire? So like F1 brakes, you know, tires get warmed by going on the track and, you know, drivers taking turns and doing all that sort of stuff. The brakes in F1 cars are cooled by rushing air going through them. So if you're stopping for a while, if an F1 car stops, oftentimes the brakes will just burst into flames if they're not
handled
correctly, right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like a shark. So smoking brakes are...
And that's why you see a lot of like the leaf blowers going on the car when they're in the pits, because exactly, those are like blowing air onto the stuff that needs to get cooled.
Yes, exactly. So in and of itself, when you see that type of smoke, actually the best thing that can happen is starting racing. It's not the opposite. So that's why I don't think I was particularly concerned when I saw that. But I was thinking, oh, maybe his brakes aren't going to be the right temp entering turn one. And maybe that'll make a difference. It might make him go in lighter or something like that. Who knows? Anyway, on the start, Hamilton has a fantastic start. Checo tries to cut him off, but Hamilton, I think, might already his nose be like a couple of inches ahead of him by the time they get down, by the time they meet each other. Then entering turn one, Hamilton basically has the racing line from Checo. He's a little bit tight on the inside, but as he brakes, is it his rears just lock? So his front brake, his fronts lock. So he just like, he does his best Daniel Ricciardo Baku impression and just flies down the escape road, like in a way that, like, what the, did his brakes fail? Like, we saw this back in, if you're a recent F1 fan, it might have been last year actually, was it Monza when Vettel went straight at the end of turn one, right? His brakes failed, so he just went straight. If your brakes fail in an F1 car, you don't turn. You're just like, see ya, I'm going ahead. Because F1 cars don't generally brake and turn at the same time anyway. But Hamilton disappears down escape road in an almost like comical, like sort of, you know, silent movie style fashion, just exits frame. The rest of the race continues and he just like disappears, chased by a bear or whatever. You know, it's crazy because now we're looking at an incredible, you know, Perez, Vettel, Gasly, is 1-2-3. Should we talk about what exactly happened to him though? Because there was voodoo in Baku, but a little bit of magic too.
Well, let me kind of finish the restart here. Hamilton goes straight on. It's probably good that Perez did brake when he did, because otherwise he and Hamilton may have collided.
Yes.
Hamilton shoots in front of Perez, and then Perez continues. Vettel on the outside is avoiding all of this and inherits second place, while Gasly, having stayed on the inside of Leclerc, takes over third place. And Leclerc doesn't concede, and fights back with probably the most intense turn-by-turn battle this year, and maybe for a while. It's awesome. Leclerc gets him on the first part of the straight, and because this straight is so long, Gasly actually gets him back and seals it on the inside of turn one. But then Leclerc swings back around to the outside, tries it again on turn two and turn four. And meanwhile, Leclerc is also defending from Norris, who's looking for scraps. It's such a great back and forth. And eventually, though, Gasly does keep the position.
Terrific drive by Gasly. He is good. We saw this with Monza against Sainz. He's good under pressure, man. He keeps it together. He's been trialed many times now in these situations for podiums and otherwise. And he has a head for it. He's good at defending. It was fair racing. Really good by the two of them.
Yeah, and I guess I'll cap it off here. In the end, Perez does keep it together up at the front and finishes in first place, which is saying something, because he was told right after the race to stop his car, like while he was celebrating over the radio. Great job, Checo. Stop the car. Just pull over and stop. Apparently, there was a hydraulic problem that could have turned catastrophic. And that they were worried about rearing its head before the race had ended.
He was nursing at the last part of the race. Can we say also the best pit wall celebrations since his win at the Sakhir Grand Prix last year? Just three teams and three drivers who were super pumped to be where they were.
I loved Vettel's radio message where he gets on the radio and it's just like, yes, 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 yes. Dude was so happy. And it made me, like, it reminded me, like, he is such an odd little nerd when it comes, like, his F1 driving personality. It was really great seeing him put together a really good race end-to-end without putting a foot wrong. It was cool seeing him back up there, and maybe he's coming to grips with that Aston, which was awesome to see.
And a monumental win for them as well, right? That's the first podium for Aston Martin.
That's true. Yeah.
Did you guys catch the Mazepin Schumacher thing?
I don't think
yes.
so. Back at turn two? Is it on that penultimate
lap? No, it was across the finish line.
Very end of the race.
Oh, no, really?
Yeah, it's go bad. For it. I don't know if you've seen the video. The cameras didn't pick it up, but I saw the stories about the fallout from it. So they're racing to the line in the flat out part.
Oh, and I can see it in the background here, yeah.
Schumacher is coming up fast behind Mazepin. And as they're as the road is straightening out, Schumacher has the toe. He moves off to the right to execute what should be a pretty easy overtake. And Mazepin swerves over and tries to block him at full speed. There is enough room for Schumacher to put the car between like Mazepin and the wall. It's not a full like block, but it was bad. It was a really dangerous and sudden lurch that was like, you know, if it'd gone wrong, it's one of those things perfectly calibrated to launch one car over the top of another. And Schumacher, you know, flipped him off as he goes by. And then immediately is on the radio, like, what is he doing? Is he trying to kill us? Now, Haas said, oh, it was a misunderstanding. Mazepin ran out of juice. He ran out of battery on the straight. And then they just sort of say he got frustrated and was upset, didn't want to lose the place. And it's like, yeah, clearly he didn't want to lose the place. But that's not a misunderstanding. That's a, like, that's a fuck up. And so, once again, like, it's... It is unfortunate, like, it's just going to be recurring until Mazepin can get his head right. It's going to be recurring theme where, like, he is misplaying his hand. He is not distinguishing himself as much of a driver, but that's hard to assess when you're in a Haas. But also, when it comes to, like, the judgment calls that a racer has to make, he makes bad ones. He remains kind of a temperamental and thoughtless dude out there, and that could have been real bad. And yeah, Haas isn't making a bigger issue out of it, but I wouldn't be surprised if that's basically the end of Schumacher's use for him. And so, like, Mazepin might just be one of those dudes who, like, he's here because they can't get rid of him, and he's bought his way in, but, like, nobody has any time of day for that guy.
Yeah. Just a couple more end of race notes here. Alonso had a monster restart going from 10th to 6th in two laps. I will post a link to that in the show notes along with the Schumacher Mazepin thing. Formula One is now apparently doing Formula E style in-car interviews of drivers as they're doing their cool down laps.
Yeah.
They did it with Sebastian Vettel and he was like, hi, but how did you get my number?
They're like, congratulations, you won driver of the day. And he's like, yeah, cool.
It's a weird thing. I used to not like this interview format, and I don't think F1's cracked the code yet because it's too new, but it is so weird when you watch like endurance racing or IndyCar, where they're just like chatting to dudes before restarts or like before the race, and like the guys are so used to it now that it's a cool vibe. One, I think if they ever get there, it'll be a good interview format.
Call Yuki Tsunoda.
God, he is touchy. Shut up.
Dump button ready.
Shut up.
Doing it.
Shut
Leave up. Me alone.
Shut up.
He's the new Kimi. I love it.
But I also think, though, these formats work a little better maybe with IndyCar and endurance racing because it's always other drivers in the booth sort of chatting guys up who are like recent graduates from the sport. I'm not sure these guys have the same rapport with like Martin or, Crofty.
Yeah. Well, speaking of some radio messages, I don't think I've ever heard Hamilton so distraught.
Distraught or just over mind blown. Like he just sounded like he was coming out of a fog. Like he's in there and he's like, did I leave the magic on? Could have sworn I turned it off. And they're like, yeah, you did turn it off. But then you hit it on the upshift. Who wants to explain what magic is?
So apparently it was interesting listening to the broadcast live because, who is it they had? Oh, I forget. Why am I forgetting his name?
Paul DeResta?
No, it wasn't Paul DeResta. It was
Anthony Davidson?
Yeah. So they had Anthony Davidson on as well, who immediately
who
knew what the magic was. And of course, yeah, because he's a test driver for them. He didn't want to, you know, he does a lot of sim stuff for them as well. He was like, maybe I've signed an NDA. Thankfully, Ted Kravitz was also on the phone call.
Kool-Aid man threw the wall into the conversation. Totally. Well, I'll tell you what magic is.
I'll tell you what it is. So apparently it is a setting that they use during non-race conditions to make sure that the brake temps in the car are kept relatively high. So it basically pulls, I believe, the brake bias all the way to the front. Is that right? So basically it sounds like, at least from that initial thing, that he accidentally hit it while he was making a movement with the steering wheel to put himself in place against Checo. He did it then. So it was after the restart happened, but it was leading into that before he broke. And then when he broke, basically his rears just didn't work, right? And then his fronts, because
there's no brake engaging. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So the fronts just lock up and he's like, see ya.
Yeah. A user on Reddit named Slendis pointed out or took some screenshots, I guess, from the onboards and noted that without the brake magic on, the front brakes get 51% of the braking.
Okay.
And they can tell this from the, there's like a little readout on the steering wheel if you look really, really close.
Wow.
And with the brake magic on, the fronts get 86.5%.
Right. It's like trying to slow down a locomotive with just the front, right? It takes forever.
Right. But yeah, like you said, Danny, they'll apparently Mercedes will turn this on. And I think other teams have similar stuff. Like during a formation lap or behind the safety car, if you do this and you're going... Yeah, if you're going slow, you can do this and it'll warm the front tires. And I think you by warming the brake, that will radiate out to the core of the tire as well. But you're right, Danny. A video from the race pointed out that the brake magic button is sort of where L2 or L left trigger would be on a modern game console controller. And they noted that to operate the clutch paddle, which you need to do at the start, yes, Hamilton rests his hand a little higher on the wheel.
Yeah, it's really awkward looking, but I guess it makes sense, right?
Yeah, so it's plausible that he might bump it with one of his fingers when shifting. Because if you, I'll put a link to this in the show notes, but from bottom to top, it's clutch paddle, gear shift, and then brake magic.
Right. Is that a UX problem? Is that what we're going to learn from this? Is this bad design, or is this just a freak instance?
Like, it's clearly worked flawlessly, probably for hundreds of races. So, do you design Let me put it this way: if this were an airliner and 100 people were dead, it's obviously a thing that like this can't ever be allowed to happen. But they are seeking like seamless, like faultless performance of this. Like, I think my guess is, they might just be like, Lewis, don't hit the fucking button again. Like, if it works well enough, it was just, it's a thing that happened one time out of hundreds. You know, I guess you live with it. But I don't know. I don't know how whether they will live with it, because Toto seems really frustrated.
Bad weekend. And two in a row.
Two in a row.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of other people.
Just think how many times we talked about Bottas today.
Well, that's the best thing. He never got into it. Something about his setup, or just like he never really clawed his way into this. And that's why, like, I thought last race was bad for Mercedes. This was like disaster from the jaws of victory. They were so close to making up ground with Verstappen, at least going out of the race, and then for Hamilton to just yeet the car. Not ideal.
At least Bottas got some points, right, Drew? Should we do the grid?
Yeah, sure. I'll shout out some stats here too from race fans. Sergio Perez winning the Azerbaijan Grand Prix. None of the three drivers on the podium had ever stood there in any of the previous Baku races.
Wow.
And even more remarkably, the Azerbaijan circuit has seen a different driver win, set pole position, and record fastest lap in each of its five rounds.
That's bizarre.
Perez also achieved a first under the current engine rules. No driver has won races with more than one team or engine supplier in this time.
That's cool.
Which is kind of baffling. Sebastian Vettel in second, Pierre Gasly in third, and with this setup on the podium, it's the second race in a row in which no works Mercedes driver finished on the podium, which has never happened in the V6 hybrid turbo era.
Whoa.
Charles Leclerc in fourth, Lando Norris in fifth, and we've got Alonso, Tsunoda, Sainz, Ricciardo, and Raikkonen in 10th. Behind them, Antonio Giovinazzi, Valtteri Bottas in 12th.
Oh, boy.
No Danny.
Behind Antonio Giovinazzi?
Yep.
That's got to be the worst driver a Mercedes ended up behind in this race, right?
Nope. Mick Schumacher in 13th, Nikita Mazepin in 14th, and then Lewis Hamilton in 15th. His worst finishing position for 12 years.
Yeah, he should have just crashed out the DNF.
Well,
so interestingly, I got a bunch of those.
Race fan says, on only one other occasion has Hamilton crossed the line in a lower position than he did on Sunday. He took 16th at his home race, again in 2009 with McLaren's uncompetitive MP424. He was classified 19th in the 2012 European Grand Prix, but was not running at the end, having tangled with Pastor Maldonado.
Oh my God, I remember that. God, he just put him in the... Maldonado put him in the wall so bad. That was tragic. Oh my God.
Yeah. But with Hamilton down there and Bottas, both of them out of the points, Mercedes's 55-race run of consecutive points finishes comes to an end.
Fourth. Just the fourth tied for best. Fourth, right? Yeah.
Fourth best in F1 history, tied with Ferrari, who also hold the record with 81 in a row over
that's
2010
piss off.
To 2014.
Toto can't be happy about that.
That's, oh, he was so mad. Did you see that video of him?
No, he slammed
watching,
the desk again.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's, just ripping his headphones off.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I love angry Toto.
It had to brutal. Have been they had to have seen the magic button toggle on. Like they knew what had happened. Somebody saw on the display what he'd just done. Remember, they can't radio the guys. At the start, and you also can't do coaching anyway. So I'm not sure. Maybe they could have told him if there were a lap under his belt and he'd done that. I don't know if that falls under the coaching rule. But
it happened too fast.
Yeah, they just had to watch as he. Not that they would have had time. It was on the upshift, so they would have at most they would have had the heartbeat to realize oh shit, he doesn't have brakes and he doesn't know it.
He's got the magic. It's like something out of like a kid's sports movie, where you break it down into something really simple to understand, something complex. It's like, oh no, the magic is on. The magic's not meant to be on. No.
It's like the Michael Jordan secret sauce in Space Jam.
Right.
Oh, it's killer. Yeah, it's also now at this point, Horner and Wolf are just reality stars, just shading each other post race game, but race by race. This time you had Horner talking about I think Toto bashes his team in public a little too much. That's not what I would do.
Oh my gosh!
And it's such a shitster. You just quietly strangle your drivers behind the scenes and passive aggressively bury them.
Congratulations, finally getting a number two who by. Also, kind of by accident.
Yeah.
Because people were saying, Red Bull have finally cracked the number two driver. It's like, this happened to them. He became available. They made the not particularly difficult decision of getting one of the best veterans who was an underdog his entire career over a kid who never clicked with
a guy
it,
who was
in a
established
way worse
enough
than
that the Red Bull pressure cooker couldn't break him like an egg.
Yeah, exactly.
But at the same time, I would say there are circuit courses coming up. I'm sure Mercedes is eager to get to those, but panic time.
Maybe.
Well, Rob, Mercedes have scored just 7 points in the last two races, which is their worst run since Hamilton signed for them.
Baku.
But just to finish off here, Nicholas Latifi in 16th, George Russell in 17th, Max Verstappen in 18th, setting the fastest lap. So he doesn't get a point for that, but no one in the top 10 does either. And then Lance Stroll and Esteban Ocon. Latifi also received a 10-second stop-go penalty for not pitting under the Verstappen red flag.
Stay out.
Yeah, his team told him to stay out. But then immediately backtracked, but by then it was too late. But they were telling him
to stay. They thought stay out as in don't pit, go through the pit lane, but don't stop at the box.
Right.
And he was like, what the fuck? He's like, stay out on the track.
Yeah. So that was converted to a 30-second time penalty. And that was Baku.
Baku.
Wow.
What a fun time. The last street circuit of the... No, we've Jeddah. Because...
True.
News. Should we get into the news?
Do it.
Singapore's out, unfortunately, although not all that surprising. The Singapore Grand Prix for the second year in a row will not happen. This is, of course, due to the tightened restrictions over COVID-19 in Singapore. It is a very densely populated area. The track is slap bang in the middle of the city, so unsurprisingly, they weren't willing to risk probably a lot of people in close proximity in the middle of the city for that. So it is out. I won't belabor it, but there's a bunch of quotes that are basically just saying that. But the FAA are looking to replace it with something. Sounds like we were all in agreement before this podcast that they should replace it with Baku.
I'm here for more Baku. Just like run it.
Absolutely.
Like it's moving up the ladder of like awesome racing venues, and I think this year it's like the chaos element is too powerful.
There's something there. There's an ancient beast buried underneath
that
city.
And it escaped when that sewer grate came up.
That's what it was. The cosmic horror was unleashed. We just couldn't see it with our puny human eyes.
Ross Braun of Formula One management also feels good about Baku.
Yeah, so he'd said like he's really heartened by the reaction to the race. He said, "I was encouraged to hear a number of commentators say we needed another 10 laps of the action we saw in the final two laps of the Azerbaijan Grand Prix because it acts as a good prequel to sprint qualifying. Sprint qualifying will be a little longer, around 17-20 laps, but it could well feature the same type of thrilling racing as the drivers won't have to worry about saving tires." Mind you, a two-lap sprint, very different from even 20 laps, but this notion of just drive the wheels off the thing does sound cool as hell. We just need to make sure those wheels stay on.
The F2 weekend was very good, but the sprint races were definitely more entertaining than the feature race, I think anyway. They were both super solid, and they just vary it up, because there's some races where people are hell for leather, because they're like, doesn't matter, I've got my position in the next one. It was a lot of fun. You should check those out. Even if you don't want to watch a full race, the F1 YouTube channel has highlights of all three races. Go check them out.
And we get our first trial of the sprint races come July 18th in Silverstone. Is that right?
Yes, that is the first one, right? That's
the
next one.
First one.
We have a lot of races between there and then, though. We're 1 week off, and then it's a triple header, right?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Canada would have been next week, but that was cancelled, obviously, already.
That's right. Let's do driver standings here. After Baku, Max Verstappen is on top with 105 points. Lewis Hamilton could have jumped him in a big way, but for some magic, he's in second with 101. Sergio Perez, with his win, has 69 points in third place, followed by Lando Norris with 66. Charles Leclerc in fifth with 52. Valtteri Bottas in sixth with 47. Carlos Sainz is close behind him in seventh place with 42 points. It's delicious. Round six of 23. Bodes well. Pierre Gasly is in eighth with 31 points. Sebastian Vettel is in ninth with 28. And Daniel Ricciardo, 10th with 26. Behind those guys, Fernando Alonso is in 11th with 13. Then Ocon, his teammate, with 12. Stroll's got 9. Tsunoda has 8. Kimi Räikkönen and Giovinazzi are tied with 1 point, and then we've got Mick Schumacher, George Russell, Nikita Mazepin, and Nicholas Latifi with 0. In the constructor standings, Red Bull is on top with 174 to Mercedes's 148. Ferrari is in third with 94. McLaren has 92. AlphaTauri, a little bit back in fifth place with 39. Aston Martin has 37. Alpine has 25. Then we jump again to Alfa Romeo with 2. With Mazepin and Schumacher's finish, Haas has jumped into ninth place ahead of Williams, but both still have 0 points. In our fantasy league, you can join in the by clicking the link in the show notes. We have the top three from Azerbaijan, from Brazil, Brasilia Amarela Assassininas. I'm sure I'm saying that correctly. Canada in second place with Enya is a gift to the world.
Sail away.
And in first place from America, Sebastian Vettel has a farm, E-I-E-I-O.
Sure. And on that farm, he has a podium.
That's true. On the overall leaderboards in Fantasy League, we have from Lithuania, Tuktuko Varutojai. You guys are really...
making it work.
Yeah, exactly. From America in second place, Real Housewives of Monaco. And in first place, from Canada, Ben Van Villeneuve. Very on brand. If you'd like to send us an email, you can do so at shiftf1podcast@gmail.com or use the form on f1.cool/emails. You can also hit us up on Twitter at shiftf1podcast. I'm at Drew Scanlon. That is at Danny O'Dwyer and at Rob Zachney. That's us around the internet. Let's take it around the world.
Let's race around the world, hey, because there's no F1 this weekend. Yeah,
there isn't, but there is World Superbike in Misano. The IMSO WeatherTech Sports Car Championship is in Detroit for the Detroit Grand Prix Belle Isle. IndyCar is also in Detroit at Belle Isle.
Rock City.
We have Camping World Trucks at the Texas Motor Speedway for the SpeedyCash.com 220.
Don't use it.
Don't use it?
Don't use Speedy. Don't use payday loans. Fuck them.
Is that what that is?
Probably. Speedy Cash, it's called. It's fucking... What else is it doing?
Could be a kind of
some crypto stuff.
Yeah, or crypto. Don't do that either.
The NASCAR Xfinity Series is also at Texas Motor Speedway for the Alsco Uniforms 250. The World Endurance Championship is at Portimao for the 8 hours of Portimao. Motocross is in Orlanok, Russia for the Motocross Grand Prix of Russia.
And we got NASCAR.
Where we're going? Is it in Detroit?
No, it's in Tejas. Fort Worth.
Texas.
For
the Long Star State. Is that right?
Well,
Lone
it's
Star.
The NASCAR All-Star Open.
Ooh.
I don't know
presented
if it's a Texas
by
crossover there.
Loans.
Yeah, you're right. Yes. Speedy Cash is a payday loan place.
All right.
And Great. It dawns on me, is one of the reasons these places sponsor these things just to bury Google results? Because you click on news for like Speedy Cash.
Oh,
the things that come
funny.
Up are all like racing related. You have to scroll down a bit before you find stories about like predatory lending practices by companies backed by such fine institutions as Wells Fargo, Bank of America, things like that. So,
Well, there you go. I'm glad we were able to rewrite that ship a little bit.
Yes. That's Baku, everybody. Final thoughts, Danny?
Fun, man. Well, what a great place. What a great. Well, we'll have a bum year 1 year. It's going to happen. 1 year, it's going to disappoint us. This year, you know, 35 laps in, it was a solid weekend. Qualifying seemed to be where the chaos was. But that's the thing. You never know with Baku.
Final thoughts, Rob?
I loved it. I'm like, it's not at all what I expected. I cannot get over, I know they're friends. I can only imagine, though, the satisfaction that I must have felt watching Hamilton just sail that car. It's just straight off the track. I know they're tight, but also their history here and just how, like, many times Vettel's been the one left holding the bag of shit from a mental lapse, and just to like have a podium fall into your hands.
Yeah. Yep, one for the ages. If you'd like to support this show and get access to all of those bonus Patreon episodes, you can do so over at patreon.com/shiftf1.
And we'll do emails, loads of emails next week. We're not doing them in the post-race ones so much, but we'll do them in the follow-ups ones. Because we got a race to talk about next week, although it's at Paul Ricard. So sort of a race. Yeah, hot and cold here on Shift F1 with the races.
Well, thank you, Danny. Thank you, Rob. Have a good race weekend, everyone. We will see you all next week.
Meow.